This episode is sponsored by Celestron, manufacturer of high-quality telescopes and an industry leader in developing exciting optical products with revolutionary technologies.
I'm Kelly Beatty of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the stars and planets that you'll see overhead during November. And this month, it's a five-course celestial meal. We first monitor the moon's motion, watch Mercury make a mad dash, seek out some shooting stars, track down three planets, and follow some celestial fish. So grab your curiosity and come along on this month's Sky Tour. First, let's make sure we know the timing of this month's lunar phases. November begins with a fat crescent moon well up in the evening sky after sunset, with first quarter falling on the 4th and the full beaver moon on the 12th. Last quarter follows on the 19th and new moon on the 26th. So basically, the moon will be hanging around the evening sky for the first half of the month and in the sky before dawn during the second half. November is also the month when we adjust our clocks to fall back an hour to standard time. That takes place before dawn on November 3rd in the U.S. and Canada, a week after our friends in Mexico and Europe do so. Down under, Australians moved to summertime in early October. Tropical countries don't make the change at all, nor does China or Russia. Anyway, the return to standard time means that most of us are still heading home from work as evening's twilight sets in. That's just fine with me, thank you very much, because it means I can sneak in a little stargazing before dinner time. But first, I need to tell you about an important daytime sky event. On Monday, November 11th, Mercury will cross the face of the Sun as viewed from Earth. This doesn't happen all that often. This tiny planet has an orbit that's tipped by 7 degrees with respect to ours, so the geometry has to be just right, and these transits always occur in either May or November. The last one happened just 3.5 years ago, in May 2016, but the next one doesn't occur until November of 2032, and the next one widely visible in North America won't be until 2049. That's 30 years from now. So maybe it's worth trying to catch this one. Mercury will take about 5.5 hours to move across the Sun's disk. And the good news is that this passage will be observable all across the U.S. In fact, those of us east of the Mississippi River and in eastern Canada can watch the entire show. Out west, the transit will be underway when the Sun rises. The bad news is that Mercury will appear as just a tiny black dot, something you'll need a telescope to see. Now, please, don't just drag your dusty old telescope out of the closet for this. Looking at the Sun is always hazardous, especially through a telescope, unless you take proper precautions. If you have an approved solar filter to put over the scope's end, great. Or you can use an indirect technique called solar projection, either with your telescope or with binoculars attached to a camera tripod. Go to skyandtelescope.com for instructions on how and when to see the transit safely. Or just watch one of the online webcasts that will be featured by NASA, Griffith Observatory, and other sites that day. Now, let's get to some nighttime stargazing. Whenever the sky is dark, keep an eye out for shooting stars from a meteor shower known as the Taurids. These are bits of debris shed by a periodic comet called Encke. You might see them any time from mid-October to late November. Usually they're far and few between, at most a few per hour from dusk to dawn. But many of them create spectacular fireballs. You might catch a second meteor shower, the Leonids, when it peaks late on the nights of November 16th and 17th. But be warned, it's usually a fairly weak shower to begin with, and this year a nearly full moon will swamp the sky with light and wash out all but the brightest Leonids. Planet-wise, November represents a changing of the guard, so to speak. Early in the month, look for Jupiter low in the southwest soon after sunset. It's bright and still relatively easy to spot. But with each passing night, it edges a little closer to the horizon and becomes harder to see. Meanwhile, Venus has started to emerge from the sun's glare and will gradually rise higher in the evening twilight throughout November. By month's end, Venus will set nearly 2 hours after the sun goes down. You might want to circle November 22nd on your calendar. On that evening, Venus and Jupiter, the two brightest planets in the sky, will be just 2 degrees apart. Make sure you find a viewing location with a clear view towards southwest so you can enjoy the show. Saturn is still hanging around as well. Look for it higher up to the upper left of Jupiter by about twice the width of your clenched fist on an outstretched arm. If you draw a line from Jupiter and Venus up through Saturn, and maybe across the sky to the moon early in the month, you're basically tracing out a line called the ecliptic, which is essentially the plane in space that Earth and most of the planets travel in. The ecliptic is also the path that the Sun follows among the stars throughout the year. With all that activity over in the southwest, will there be anything worth seeing in the rest of the evening sky? You bet. After it gets dark, and of course that happens sooner now, look high in the southeast for a giant diamond in the sky that's about the size of your hand with your fingers spread wide apart. Sky watchers the world over know this as the Great Square, representing the chest of Pegasus, the flying horse. Now, the square itself is easy enough to see, but you might have trouble visualizing it as part of a horse. For one thing, this horse is flying upside down. Another thing is that the constellation doesn't represent the complete animal, just the front half. The front legs of Pegasus extend from the top star toward upper right. Its neck and head stretch out and up from the diamond's right corner. Now, there are a couple of strings of stars stretching leftward from the big square, and those do seem like hind legs to me, but technically they all belong to the constellation of Andromeda, a chained princess in Greek mythology. Throughout the night, Pegasus flies higher in the sky and gets flipped over even more on its back. If your skies are reasonably dark, you should be able to make out the circlet of Pisces, a lovely little pentagon of stars hanging directly under the Great Square. And you can look past Pegasus's nose, to the right, by the width of your clenched fist, to reach Delphinus, the dolphin, my wife's favorite constellation. Like the circlet, it's fairly faint, but if you can see it at all, it's sure to catch your eye, a tiny diamond with a tail extending down and to the right. Go one fist farther to the right, and you'll chance upon another small constellation called Sagitta, the Arrow. And its four main stars really look like one, with the brightest of them marking the point. Return to the Great Square for a moment and focus on the two stars on the left side. Follow an imaginary line downward from them, about 4 or 5 fists, until you come to a bright star all on its own above the southern horizon. That's Fomahot, the brightest star in the constellation Pisces Austrinus, the southern fish. In fact, Fomahot derives from the Arabic words for mouth of the fish. This solitary sparkler is the only really obvious star in this entire stretch of sky. Fomahot is fairly close as stars go, only 25 light years away, and astronomers have been paying a lot of attention to it. It looks like a single point of light, but it's actually a double or binary star. And astronomers have recently realized that it's actually triple. Fomahot is also a fairly young star, and it's surrounded by a dusty disk of debris. Oh, and there's a planet going around it too. Around mid-November at 7 p.m., note what's below Fomahot along your horizon. That direction is due south. Now do an about-face to look due north, and you'll find Polaris, the north star, roughly halfway from the horizon to overhead. Don't expect to be dazzled by Polaris. It's only half as bright as Fomahot. Take a moment to look straight up. At 10 p.m. early in November, 9 at mid-month, and 8 at the end. If your sky is good and dark, and there's no bright moon around, you might just make out a faint, fuzzy glow. That's the Andromeda Galaxy, 2.5 million light-years away. It's the most distant object you can see with just your eyes. This galaxy is a near twin of our own Milky Way, and it's actually headed our way at about 70 miles per second. These two behemoths will collide in about 4.5 billion years. Our solar system will still be around then, but you and I surely won't. That's about it for this month. If you want more tips for viewing the night sky, check out our website, skyandtelescope.com, which offers great star and planet gazing activities. If you haven't already subscribed, you can find Sky Tour on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. And please leave a rating or review. It'll help others find the show. And if you want to explore the solar system and universe more deeply, please do check out the full line of binoculars and telescopes available at Celestron.com. Sky Tour is a production of Sky and Telescope, a division of the American Astronomical Society, and is produced by me, Kelly Beatty. Next month, we'll explore how a bunch of maidens got involved with an angry bull. Until then, I wish you clear skies.